Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Well, I every time I feel like I say, what a week, but this was a calmer week than we've had in a little while, but there's still a lot going on. I guess we've left the summer season behind, who could tell, but things are picking up.
The doldrums have passed.
The doldrums,
perhaps, I don't know,
possibly have passed.
Well, it's a weird, you know, we've discussed this before, it's a weird year. Everything is a little strange. I think we're in this weird situation where I feel like, as far as Apple news goes, we've had the first drips, and I think there's going to be more, and I think it's going to be kind of like a punctuated thing where it's like every few weeks we might have a couple new announcements in the lead up to the holiday shopping season.
Yeah, for those who don't know about this website, there is a great website that is whatdayinmarchisit.com. Today is March 209th, by the way.
Yeah. Feels like it, sure.
Yep. Yep. I went to an Apple store this week. That was weird. Mm-hmm. That was weird.
Yeah.
I haven't done that in a long time.
I actually need to do that because my wife uses Beats. God, I never remember which set of headphones. Beats X, I think.
It's the coolest letter
and
for the coolest headphones.
Yeah. She's on her second pair, and now they're dying and doing weird stuff. So, unfortunately, I believe we got the Apple Care last time thinking, well, they didn't seem to last super long last time. So, you know, I guess we have to put in a repair request and figure out how that works nowadays.
Fun. Well, so I went to get the, I keep calling it the Sport Loop, but that's, which is what it should be called, right?
But that's what I have. I'm wearing a Sport Loop.
But the Velcro-y thing is the Sport Loop, which.
Maybe they should call it the Velcro Loop?
Yeah, Fabric Loop.
Fabric Loop, yeah.
Because this is like a sport band, and it's a sport, it's a loop, but it's the solo loop. It's the
just remember, it's the Han Solo.
It's
loop.
The Han Solo of loops. That's what I was going to say. Is it's a star solo loop, an Apple Watch story. The store was pretty straightforward. I mean, and I'm going to be honest here. I mostly did this because I was interested in writing and talking about the solo loop, and interested in talking about the Apple Store being open. So I did this, and here we are, and that justifies my $49 purchase of a watch band.
The freelance life.
Yeah, right. I mean, you guys got to make it work. So I haven't been to the. It's not a mall shopping center. It's California. It's outdoors. We just shop outdoors here all year round because we don't care. There was kind of nobody there. They have a mask policy. There was a few people around. It was not, you know, bustling or anything at 11 in the morning. And then the Apple Store has like three lines. It's got the line to sort of check in, and then they've got a line to go in the store. And then it turns out they have another line that there was nobody in at that point, which is like for pickup. And the idea there is if you're picking up, as I was, an online order, you don't even need to come in the store. They just bring it out to you and hand it to you outside. And that's what happened. And it was super easy. And it looked like they had kind of a one-to-one ratio in the store. Like you would be brought in by somebody, and then they would ask what you want and what you want to see or whatever it is. And they would do that, and then they'll, you know, and then they'll send you back out when you're done. So interesting, not scalable to high volume, but, you know, doing the best they can, I think, under the circumstances. I would imagine that a lot of the stuff that's happening at that Apple store now is probably what I did, which is pick this up. Like, literally, that solo band was, solo loop was, shipping in November or something, or get it at your local store tomorrow. Like, okay,
yeah,
I guess I'll do that.
Yeah. Apple's traditional weird stocking choices,
where they choose well, and right now it's even weirder, but like they choose to put stuff in retail because they want to have retail customers have availability. There aren't a lot of retail customers now, although there are some, but I can order that product. I don't have to walk in and ask for it. I can just order it and have them hand it to me the next day, which is what happened. So, you know, they're coming up to speed. It's a weird situation, but they're coming up to speed. My county was just put in the red alert zone, and that sounds terrible. It's actually one level down from where we were before. The red alert level in California, you can actually do some partial reopenings of things, including some schools, although my son's school isn't open yet. So, yes, we're hoping, you know, orange is what you're shooting for. There aren't six colors of the red alert scale. There are like four colors.
We have colors in ours, too. My cousins went from, they just got downgraded from red the other day. I don't know where we are. I think we're pretty good, actually.
Yeah, we're in the, you know, I don't know what it is. The purple is the bad one. You don't want to be
in
the purple.
Well, it's always, as we talked about with the
air quality.
The air
what's,
quality.
What's above red? And the answer is purple and maroon, and then like
maroon
dark brown death. That's unbreathable air is dark brown. Yeah.
We apparently are yellow in our state's rubric, which is the, there's red, yellow, green, and gray.
Ah, interesting.
Gray is apparently the best, which is just, I guess.
Oh, interesting. Ours is yellow. Yellow, and I think they went with the psychology thing there, which is like, it's yellow, but that you still need to be, it's yellow alert, you still need to be on guard. It's not over.
Sure.
It's just yellow versus, orange for moderate, red for substantial, and then the purple is for widespread. So we came down to red, and I would imagine that I suspect this, who knows if this is true or not, but I suspect that in California there's going to be kind of a gradual reduction of COVID cases because we have the weather in our advantage. I'm a little concerned about the places that have bad, like your place, that has bad weather because people, you know, one of the ways to deal with this is to not go inside, which is harder when it's like 8 degrees, right?
Yep. I mean, it just means...
bundle up,
you know. So, well, social stuff, right? It just means we'll be doing nothing, right? We will not be leaving the building, except for, you know, required things,
shopping
and that. But like, you know, it's funny. The other week, I mean, I say this is a little startling for me to say, to admit to on a podcast. My wife and I went to a movie.
Whoa!
Asterisk. A friend of ours, actually, our friend Jane Ritt, who's on TPK. Sometimes over on The Incomparable.
Yep.
Her husband, who is a childhood friend of mine, rented out our local indie movie theater, which is renting them out. And so they allowed up to 15 people in, and you know, they were very specific about where you could sit, and you know, they had ventilation coming in and all that stuff. It was fine. You know, it was like, you know, and we watched like a kung fu movie. But yeah, it was 15 people spread out, and it's like a 2-floor thing, right? There's like a balcony and stuff like that. So, you know, other than sitting next to my wife, there was nobody else even within 10 feet of us.
My local theater that reopened has that, where you can rent out, you can pay, not unreasonable, especially if
it was pretty cheap. It was like a couple $100.
Yeah,
it's not a lot.
Ours, I think it's like for $100, you can get the entire movie theater. And if you have friends and you socially distance, you can just go see a movie. And I mean, it's money for them. I mean,
exactly. I mean, they are otherwise just losing money. So no reason not to.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought. Anyway, the solo loop itself, it's pretty good. I'm baffled. So first off, I have friends who do Apple Retail, and the return thing, which they totally botched, right? That first off, they were like, you have to return your Apple Watch if the band is the wrong size, which is dumb. And they've gone back on that now. You just send in the band and they'll give you a new band. But people are also buying bands and having to return them, and the package waste is enormous for stuff like that. And this is, it's very clear this is a product that was designed with try-on in mind, and nobody's doing that, or at least very limited people are doing that. But the thing that I really don't get is, why is it that it took John Gruber to post a map that literally says, here's the dot on the sport band and its corresponding size. Use this. Like, it's so straightforward. So many Apple Watch users have a sport band. They know which dot. Like, if you asked me without looking, what dot do you use for your sport band? I would say 4 or 5 sometimes, but mostly 4. I know it. Like, I know how many dots it is in that you snap in the sport band. And so that's how I got mine, is that I used Gruber's size photo thing reference and ordered that size, and it fits. So I don't know why Apple didn't do a better job with this. given that it requires precision sizing, and the moment they announced it, right, I think all of us were like, oh boy, it comes in 15 different sizes, so you've got to pick the precise one for you. It's like, like, I'm just really surprised that the best they could do was, you know, the piece of paper around your wrist, when they have, at least for a lot of people, another way to do it that's actually more effective. I don't know. I don't get it.
Yeah, I you know, some stuff falls through the cracks. I think that's what it is here. They botched some stuff, but there's a lot going on. Situations are different and weird. And, you know, I feel like this is a place where, yeah, they made some mistakes, but I feel like personally I would cut them some slack on it. But yeah, could have been done better. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I'm in a rush to get one of these. I don't really change bands that often. And certainly the finickiness of it seems to me like a thing where it's like, yeah, I don't know. Do I really need to go spend $49 on a band that may or may not fit me? I might have to return.
Yeah.
That seems like a lot of work.
Yeah. It's nice. I mean, it looks, I believe it's nice. It looks like a sport band, but it's stretchy. And taking on and off is weird. I may get used to it. It turns out I like the sport band. I didn't think I would, but I do like the standard sport band. I like it. I like how it looks. This is like it, except there's nothing. It's weird, right? Like, there's no little dots and there's no little thing underneath. It's just like I'm wearing one of those little things that you wore 10 years ago, 15 years ago to show that you were for or against something, right? It's a little bit like that. I don't know. It's interesting. I suspect the fabric ones are probably a lot nicer, and for $99 they should be, but it's nice. Apple has done a very good job with the watch bands. I think that all of them are really pretty nice and pretty well designed. So, you know, yay, I guess. But anyway, it was an interesting thing to do for a person who doesn't frequently leave the house.
right.
Except to walk the dog or run. So I did that. And the Apple Store, it's still there. The mall is still there, too. I don't know what's going on there, but they're still there. Or the shopping center. Not a mall. Not really. Anyway, that was my adventure. I went outside. I drove a car to a different place.
The adventures.
It's big. Oh, yes. Oh, the things you'll see. The things you'll do. I don't know. You want to talk about customization? That's been going around. The viral customize your home screen, which everybody, you know, should have seen coming, because like the whole idea of widgets is remaking your home screen on your iPhone in a way that was never really possible before. And you know, people are super into it. Which I made a post about this. Shouldn't surprise us, because like I grew up in the era when I was in college, especially, like everybody's Mac had a name and a custom wallpaper and a custom icon for the hard drive with a custom name and custom sounds. And maybe if a little later on, there was like Kaleidoscope, so you would change your Mac's entire UI theme. This is not new.
We talked about it a little bit on Clockwise this week. And Chris Finn brought up the using ResEdit to change icons and stuff. And I was like, yep, totally did that.
Changed system icons, right? Before there, eventually there were like apps that would do it, but you could just open ResEdit and open the system file.
Right. I mean, there's like,
and change the icons.
Yeah, exactly. We used to do that. I mean, and I remember when my friend and I tried our hand at running a BBS for a little while using the First Class system, which was a GUI-based BBS system. And one of the things there was like, there were sound effects when you opened folders and stuff like that, which today we would all be like, oh my God, this is maddening. Why? But you know, when you're 14 and you know, it's 1994, it seems like the most amazing thing ever. But yeah, like everything had custom icons. Like it wasn't really until much later in Mac OS 10, I think, that I really got out of the habit of spending the time doing that. And even now, as I commented on one of the shows this week, I always put a custom icon on my computer icon on my Mac's desktop, because for two reasons. One, I think it looks better, you know, so like I use the icon for the type of computer it is, which are icons that the Mac OS has hidden away in a directory. So like my iMac icon looks like an iMac. I think that the you know, default Macintosh HD hard drive icon is both ugly and no longer representative of what a hard drive is.
Indeed.
Your computer does not have a silver box in it anymore, most likely. So it's weird that that's still used to represent it. In some ways, I kind of wish they would just do an updated version of the classic Macintosh HD rectangle with a dot on it. because right. That would be just as accurate. So I like the idea of having the computer icon because it just feels, it's like a little thing that makes it feel more custom, but I don't really bother doing it anymore with anything else generally. Like it's too much work and it's hard for me to find things. I don't begrudge people who do it. I just don't, I don't want to spend the time doing it.
I did it for my server. I actually bought a stock icon for my server because I most of the devices that I have are named for monkeys or apes.
Yeah.
And I named the new giant hard drive I built is Mandrill. And then I thought, well, I should get a picture of a Mandrill. And I found an icon that looked great of a Mandrill. And it's now actually the desktop pattern. Desktop. That's old school desktop pattern. The desktop picture. The wallpaper is that icon really large, and then that's also the icon of the hard drive. So when I mount that that server, I get the little Mandrill icon, and it came with some other monkey pictures. So I have some other ones on. I think I have a lemur for my for my Mac's hard drive
back
icon.
When I still had my Mac Mini, the icon for my all my computers are named after spaceships, fictional spaceships usually. And my Mac Mini was Defiant, and I had a little Defiant icon that might have been an Icon Factory thing.
Yeah, could have been. That sounds like
I think
like
they did a Star Trek set
icons.
At some point. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, my server is actually named Gibbon, and it's a picture of a Gibbon that I love. It's delightful. It's amazing, hanging from a branch. And then the big server volume is Mandrill, and it's got a Mandrill on it, and it's cool. So like, that's my customization. And on my Mac, you know, I've got Downlink, the app that downloads the satellite pictures of live satellite pictures of the Earth as my background. Like, this is customizing. So, and that's my point is like iOS, it's actually kind of weird. And I think a function of something that we've talked about before, which is Apple feeling like Springboard, essentially the home screen was not broke. So they weren't going to fix it. And they didn't fix it for years and years and years. Like, you couldn't do anything, and even now you can't do like what you do on Android. We should say I would prefer this icon at the bottom right corner of the screen.
Right.
Nope, you
leave
can't
blank
do
space.
That
nope
you no gotta keep adding apps space. Until it gets down to the bottom right corner.
Well, like, this is, you know what I like about this is the fact that because it has become such a, you know, phenomenon, and we'll see how long that lasts.
Sure.
Right? Like, this could just be a flash in the pan.
Yeah,
thing.
Somebody asked me, is it a fad? I said, it is a fad, but the impulse is real and doesn't go away. Even if this particular moment, it's more fad-like. The underlying, will people still want to customize their iPhones in 6 months? Yeah, they will.
Yeah, it just won't be as, it won't be this huge explosion of it, right?
Exactly.
It'll be like a slower, constant number. And I think what's interesting about this to me is whether or not Apple takes anything away from this, because it is big right now, right? It's huge. We know David Smith, who developed WidgetSmith, which is being used in a lot of these cases and has gotten this just insane amount of, you know, recognition.
Yeah.
You know, it's all over TikTok. And I posted an article in one of our Slacks where he is from
Glamour,
the magazine.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's all over. And it's like, I just wonder if Apple will take anything away from this and sort of acknowledge, like, all right, this is something people want. Maybe that's something that we fold into a future OS update of some
kind. That's what I said on Upgrade is I have to believe that somebody at Apple looked at this and some other customization stuff like went higher up on the priority queue.
Sure.
I have to believe that.
So.
And the reason I am pretty optimistic that that's the case is Apple's already playing this game because Apple wants to drive the upgrades to new versions of iOS and iOS 14, by the way, rapid adoption, right? And why? It's because of this. And the reason we've seen this before is Apple knows that the new emoji set drives updates because people have FOMO about not having the latest and greatest emojis. They at least believe, and I think there's maybe some truth to it, that like new animojis or new memoji styles help drive some upgrades because you want, they haven't been as successful with that as like just plain emojis, but like I think they believe there is a dynamic where people feel left out because they don't have the ability to do this cool new thing that's fun, as opposed to, and a lot of, you know, computery people are like, but that's just, you know, it's just images. It's just silly. It's frivolous. It's not a serious computer feature. But the truth is, Apple wants everybody on the latest version, and they know that there are people who are motivated by this stuff. There's nothing wrong with that. Apple already knows it. So how can you look at this phenomenon and not go, oh, here's another way for us to drive iOS adoption, is cool new customization features that you only get with an. So, you know, I would have been an advocate for customization inside Apple anyway, but if I were inside Apple now, I would be pointing this and saying, this is how we get people to update to the latest versions, and we need to get more customization. Like, there should be no reason that users shouldn't be able to just replace the icon of an app on their home screen if they want, right? And instead, what people are doing is creating shortcuts with custom icons that open the app in question, which is silly, but it works. But it's such a hack, and you have to open shortcuts, and then it opens the app, and it's like, you look at that, or even just removing the interim step. But I would say find a new way to do custom user assigned icons and let them do that, you know, put it on the list, right? And it probably was on the list, but way down. And maybe after this week, it's higher up.
Yeah, two things. One, I cannot wait until next year where they come out on stage and announce iOS 15 and the tagline is aesthetic AF. I will be very amused if they won't do that, but it would be really, really funny.
Yes. Operation and just, aesthetic AF.
Yeah. Just generally speaking, philosophically, Apple has always, I think a big thing when the iPhone started out especially was there was an idea of uniformity, because there was the idea of simplicity, right? Like, you have this page, it's a grid, it's apps, you press the app, you get that app, right? Like, you press the icon, you get that app. And I think Apple really vaunted the idea of, also, especially when Johnny Ive was in charge, of having a very top-down aesthetic look, right? Which is saying, like, we're going to tell you what looks good, and that is how it's going to work. And that is always, in the last, you know, two decades or so, I think that has very much been Apple's MO when it comes to aesthetics, is like, we are going to make that decision and you will like it. And oftentimes people do, right? Like, I don't want to say that Apple's taste is bad, because I think it's mostly pretty good, but it also was, you know, something that didn't really brook argument. There wasn't any way to, you know, push back, right? Like, you could get a case for your phone or put stickers on your phone or whatever. But, like, from a software level, all you could do is change your desktop background.
Right. The wallpaper thing is very much it's like the iPhone bumper. You know, you want a wallpaper? Fine. Here's wallpaper.
Yeah. It's very begrudging. And I feel like maybe there's an opportunity now as Apple has evolved to, you know, with different people in control of design, maybe they're more willing to, you know, loosen the reins on that and essentially give users more of that customization. Because it's one thing, you're totally right, Android has had that for years. That's because that's very much Google's philosophy, I think, is like, yeah, we just kind of want you to do whatever you want to do, right? Like, they have tried to impose, like, they've tried to take a lesson from Apple and impose things like the material design. And, like, again, I think they've done okay jobs with it, but it's just philosophically, at a fundamental level, Google's approach is always very different to Apple when it comes to just how things should look and what degree of control you should have. And so I think it would be great if Apple decides they want to loosen up a bit. And, you know, this does go back to the roots of Mac and feeling like the Mac was fun. And that's a big part of what made it successful, was feeling like it was friendly and it was a computer that, you know, wasn't, you had to type arcane commands in, et cetera, right? Like, it was graphical and it was playful and all of that. And Apple has definitely lost that a bit in the last couple decades. And I between this and things like adding more color to the iPad and watch lines, right, like, I don't know. I'm ready for Apple to swing the pendulum back a little bit.
Loosen up a little bit. I think with iOS, they're definitely, the argument is always going to be, especially from, I think, some designers, that you want to keep it locked down because people are going to create ugly stuff, and they are going to create ugly stuff. And a lot of the stuff that's out there now is kind of ugly. But here's the thing, that the argument, look, the DTP revolution, which Apple massively benefited from, was in part led to a billion zillion people doing newsletters with terrible fonts and a different font for every line and a different font here and there. And they were awful and it was bad design. But you know what? That DTP revolution also provided the power of desktop publishing to everyone, and including professionals. And there was a lot of great stuff that came out of it. And the ugly stuff kind of faded away. And the great stuff remained. And I would argue that that's the same thing. Like, don't shy away from giving your users choice and the ability to express themselves because you're afraid they will express themselves in ugly ways. Because quite frankly, it's up to them whether they want to design ugly things or not. And also, it's in the eye of the beholder. And if to them it's ugly, they'll realize it and they'll change it. And if it's not ugly, then what does it matter to you?
Yeah, literally, what does it matter if it's ugly? Like, and especially with something like the iPhone, where it's a device that's really predominantly being used by a single person. Yes. Your iPhone does not affect anybody else.
It
right?
is like, the most personal thing.
You could make an
thing.
Argument that like somebody else might sit down on your Mac and not be able to find things because you've super customized it or whatever.
But that was always the case. I mean, and it's the same impulse, right? Back when I was in college, your Mac was you. It was where all of your schoolwork was, and if you're on a BBS or you're telnetting into the library, you know, systems or whatever, like it was you. And that's why we did it. And today there is nothing that's more you than your phone.
Yeah. And I mean, and not to dispute that. I mean, like, I think Lex Friedman and I have talked about this in the past, the hell is other people's computers where you sit down.
Oh my God.
You're like, oh no, the shortcut. Oh no, the gesture doesn't
work. Where's
lunch bar? Why are the apps?
Why is scrolling happening the wrong way?
Yeah. And it's fun. You know, it's funny, but it's not a thing that really on a day to day situation, like certainly my wife and I, like she has a PC laptop she uses for work. And whenever I have to use it for something, I'm like, this trackpad is terrible. When she tries to use the Mac, she can't scroll. And like, it's annoying. I'm pressing down on things. And we're like, I can totally understand this impulse.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's fairly, you know, it's 5% of the time that we're using one or the other's, you know, device instead. So you can live with it. It's not a big deal.
You can survive it. And
it's like
for them, it's delight and joy because they've got it exactly the way they want it. Imagine
exactly.
Or to put this another way, imagine if every Mac had the same background and the same menus and the same settings and the same dock, and all of the preferences were not available. They were just set by Apple. And, you know, we might have somebody out there who uses a stock configuration of macOS and doesn't change anything about it at all. But I would wager that among our listenership, most people have a preference here or there that they've set, or an add-on thing that they've added. Like, that's it. That's the whole point. And it's not always for functional reasons. Sometimes it is also for aesthetic reasons. And it's all good, right? Like, that's why... I don't want to make too much of the people who are grumping about this, because I haven't actually had anybody grumping to me about the darn kids, the darn millennials. These are not millennials. These are younger than that, by the way, who with their dumb things. Because, like, first off, Gen X did it. I saw that in person. I'm sure that if given the opportunity, boomers would have done it, but they didn't have any devices. Do they put a sticker on their calculator or something? I don't know. I'm too young for that. So... I haven't seen the pushback. I imagine it's there, but like it doesn't really matter. What I love is the celebration of this, which is yes, look, the dam burst. Like, people wanted to customize their iPhones,
it's funny,
and they couldn't do it before.
When you said like everybody had the same setup, I immediately pictured the 1984 commercial, right? Like,
yes.
That's really when Apple does become the exactly
natural
what they railed against.
Natural scrolling is the only scrolling now.
My dad still has never turned on natural scrolling, whenever I use his computer,
Syracuse is the same way. And one time Syracuse actually was in my office at Macworld, and he was trying to scroll, and he was like, it's backward. And I'm like, no, it's the right way, John. But there's a bug in iOS, by the way, where occasionally a web view embedded in an app will have the scroll direction reversed. And I'll start to scroll and be like, oh no, it's all backward. It's like that. I scroll that way for
I've
like
gone
a decade.
To the mirror universe.
But it's not good. Don't. Don't. What was the other thing I wanted to? Our conversation last week led to my Macworld column this week. Gotcha.
Oh, yes. I saw that.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
It's a really great idea. And then I didn't have anyone better, and I wrote that story. So what does the future of the Apple Watch look like? Which is, that was a fun little story to write. I was actually really happy with that. That was, you know, very much like what we said, probably time to actually break compatibility and do a different, you know, a different screen. If you think about it in terms, something that I'm not sure we mentioned last time, but it's like, if you think about it in terms of that screen size, sort of like they went 3 years with the one screen size, and now they're 3 years on this other screen size, the larger screen size. So It's actually kind of the right time to do a different, to change up a screen as that original screen size fades away, presumably next year it'll go away, to do something different. And I think given how Apple has sort of merchandised a lot of their products, where it's like, no, we got lots of different kinds. Like, I don't think the classic Apple Watch design will necessarily go away. I just think I can totally see them doing an additional alternate Apple Watch design and say, oh, but you know, the new Series 7 next year comes in, it could come in both shapes, or they could keep the 6 available but also do the 7. Because I think some people will like this current design and will want to keep their watch bands, but I think changing it up and doing a circular watch face, I feel like that's a thing that they should probably go to now after all of this time. And then I threw in, like, do they do a fitness band, which I think they should at some point, because I think they should be brave and not worry about cannibalizing super low-end watch sales with a fitness band. Some people just don't want to wear a watch, and so you want to get them in the ecosystem too. And then I threw out my Android thing again, which is I totally think that they should just do Apple Watch on Android and use it as a beachhead for their ecosystem, because they can, so why not?
yeah. It's... Yeah,
so that's my that's
variation.
It's funny because for years the Apple Watch, I would be like, no, don't mess it up. Keep it the same. Keep the bands the same. Don't mess it up. And you know, 6 years in, I'm like, all right, it's time to mess it up. It's time to do some new stuff. I feel like the Apple Watch is in a great position now. So, thanks for that column idea, Dan. That's what I'm saying.
Sure. Do you want to talk about Amazon quickly?
Yeah. Well, you just posted a post about Amazon and their wacky
you know, I was thinking about it, and I kept thinking I should write something about it, and it wasn't until I saw a tweet from Jared Newman, who used to do some writing over PC World, too, right when we were there, over at Fast Company, talking about how Amazon's whole, so much of their message this week and this event, which was really weird, they streamed it but only to select press. So I was like reading a traditional live blog at The Verge, and it was very strange. But like, so much of this is about this safety and security angle, and it's something, it felt very, you know, the thing that everybody seized upon was this drone, right? Which is bananas. It's a little drone that flies around your house that has a camera on it, and it's there supposedly to be a security thing. It's like those security robots in the mall that are always falling into fountains and stuff. I think this is super weird. You know, there will be people, I'm sure, who buy it, but I think there are so many questions about exactly how this works and who this is for that I don't quite understand it. But it does mesh with this whole weird point that Amazon is making about how you're not safe anywhere. And I find this kind of disconcerting as a message about, you know, focusing so heavily. Like, I get it. Safety and security feels like something, you know, that sells. It's a message that sells, in the same way that Apple, you know, is focused on health and wellness and this idea of, like, you know, protecting yourself vis-a-vis your health as opposed to protecting your physical security. But it does feel kind of fear-mongering. And increasingly so when they introduce stuff for your car, your home, your Echo listening for, you know, more sounds of things in your house. And the fact that all this stuff is networked together potentially with other smart devices in your neighborhood, which I find just kind of unsettling, especially from a company like Amazon, which has shown in the past that it's willing to you know, share information from its cameras with law enforcement and develop facial recognition stuff that it uses with law enforcement. And it feels increasingly tone deaf and very surveillance state-y to me. And I'm not somebody who jumps on that stuff, you know, very quickly. I think that's not where my mind automatically goes. I have lots of smart speakers. I like them. I as I mentioned in the post, I just bought a couple wireless security cameras from a new house. And that's like, I think there's a level of it where it's like, all right, you know, I don't live in this house yet. I want to be able to keep an eye on it when I'm not there. But this idea that danger lurks around every corner and that you need technology to protect you, I think is worrying to me, especially as I look at, you know, I pulled out, and I don't want to make a huge deal of these stats because they're stats without context. But, you know, the crime stats from the FBI over the past decade or so, like burglaries are way down, like in the last 10 years, like 44% or something like that. You know, is there really this much danger, or is Amazon capitalizing on the idea that, you know, we all look at the news and it seems, you know, then the media wants to portray things as like there's unrest everywhere and rioting and looting and all this stuff. And it, you know, even though I'm sure Amazon was not working on these products, you know, starting when this, you know, this started to become more of a commonplace thing in our society, I do think that in some ways it does feel like it sort of monetizes that element of distrust in your neighbors and what's right. going on in your life, in your city, etc. And that is, it's weird. I find it discomforting.
Yeah. I find the idea of a, I mean, the whole Ring thing where it's like the Ring doorbell and we're going to link up with police, and your home doorbell that you motivated maybe out of fear of people robbing you or maybe not is now also part of a police surveillance network. And again, yeah. it's not, the story is more complex than that, but still sure. it's, that's not,
it's not what I signed up for.
Good.
Right. I kind of feel like,
no,
you know, and,
no.
and I just, it is a weird and unsettling thing to have your fear turned into monetization. And this is nothing new, right? Like if you, I was talking to our friend Guy English about this idea, and he pointed out like you Google burglary statistics and the first thing that comes up is, you know, essentially the trade organization for like security system makers, right? Talking about burglary statistics. And it's like, well, you know, security systems have been doing this for decades, right? There's nothing new in that. But the fact of the connection with all your technology and the direct connection with like larger organizations and law enforcement, stuff like that, I think so much is enabled by that that may have unforeseen or perhaps foreseen by perhaps. Some people consequences, that there's just a lot in there that feels very much like technology. Like I just, this idea that you could be sitting there and you're just getting constant notifications every few seconds about something dangerous is happening, right? Like as though we don't all have enough anxiety to deal with in our lives currently anyways. It just, it seems like a weird choice to make. I can understand why they feel like it's a successful message, but I don't feel like this is something that is really helping people. you know, it's not a way the technology feels like it's helping people so much as just creating new problems yep. for them to worry about.
Well, fear does sell. And yep. we've also learned in the last couple of decades that fear is a great motivator by people who want to take more control, get more power, get more access. Like I'm going to try to not get too political here, but I'm just going to say that post 9/11, a lot of things were put into law that were pretty harmful to civil liberties, and it was all done in the name of protecting us. And of course, in the end, they were used for things far beyond protecting us. And that historically, I believe that, you know, there should be a balance between, because law enforcement agencies always want more. And there needs to be a counterbalance to say, no, you don't get that. We live in a free society and not a police state. But fear is a great tool to give more power to the organizations that want as much power and control as you can give them, because that's how they've been designed.
And having the private companies that now exist in this liminal state sort of between the government entities that are responsible for that and, you know, private citizens, it really starts blurring the lines even more, because you are ostensibly inviting these things into your home.
Exactly.
With or without the knowledge of all the consequences thereof. And I think there's a lot of questions about, as I wrote at the end of that post this morning, are you really making yourself safer, or are you just giving yourself the illusion of safety, right? Because not only are you, you're trying to secure your physical premises, but you have now invited all these cameras into your home that, you know, tap into larger databases, and the information may be stored in the cloud. And as we've seen, security is a really big worry and privacy is a really big worry. What are you really opening yourself up to? And net, have you really made yourself safer, or have you just changed your threat profile, so to speak?
Yeah.
So I will not be buying a drone that flies around my house.
Oh, and it's such a cool idea, but no.
But why? Yeah, I just don't. I point out, we're all at home these days.
I know.
Who is this for?
I know exactly. Like, it's a great. Yeah. I could see, like, I know the pitch here, right? The pitch is you can't see your whole house from a security camera, and you're not going to put a security camera in every room.
In every room.
But. Yep. You know, but again, the value of a security camera is mostly like to alert you if strangers are roaming around your house. I suspect that
or to provide a deterrent.
Yes, yeah. I suspect that the pitch of this one, because I don't think this thing is going to fly around like a night watchman, right? I don't think that's what it's going to be. I suspect that what the pitch really is you're not at home, which again, let's hope eventually that'll happen for a lot of people, and you can't see the cat. Where's the cat? Send the drone into another room. Well, the cat's under the bed because the cat is terrified of the drone. But
yeah, right.
Now you've seen where the cat was. So that's,
I mean,
that's
did
great.
You? I guess my point is, people have had cats for hundreds of years. Do you need to know where the cat is right now when you're not at home?
You do not.
Yeah, you probably don't. Again, yeah. Anyways.
All right. Well, another week gone by. What will next week bring?
Ooh,
I'm afraid
question.
To ask.
Yeah, that's the right attitude. You should be afraid to ask.
All right. Thanks to everybody out there for supporting us. We appreciate it. And we'll be back next week. But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.